please be seated.
So, Lord, those are my questions, and I thank you, Mr. Carter. Thank you, Lord.
Thank you. Mr. Baikiven, take your
action. Hold on, Lord. Thank you. Mr. Carter, during your cross-examination, you were asked about notes of yours in which you asked that the notes indicated something to the effect that you were asking Mr. Raymond not to give certain parts of your file to the to Mr. Harris. You remember that?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you began to say something about Mr. Harris and Mr. Tucker, I think, coming to your office. Would you relate what happened then on that occasion?
Well, we invited them into the boardroom, and of course, discussion started on the appraisal done on the property. And I was told by Mr. Harris that I had ruined his life. And so on. So, I mean, I said, look, I refuse to discuss anything any further with them regarding the property or anything to do with the appraisal. I said anything they want to discuss concerning the appraisal, they should discuss that with the Department of Transportation.
I see. And what was the atmosphere like?
Well, it was not pleasant as far as I was concerned.
All right. Okay. So you wanted any further discussions that he had to be with the Department of Transportation,
right,
rather than directly with you?
Yes.
All right. And that was your reasoning for that question to Mr. Raymond, was it?
Yes, I wanted to protect my file.
All right. Okay. And were you aware that, perhaps you're not, but are you aware that there's a document discovery process in litigation?
Yes.
Okay. Now, Mr. Caldwell referred you to another note of yours in which, as I understand it, you indicated that you didn't believe there was sufficient frontage in the remnant of Lot 92-2 after the taking of Parcel 97-1 for access.
I don't know why that's in my note, because when I look at the information I put in the report, I state that there's, I believe, 29 meters of frontage there, which would be more than enough to take a 20-meter access.
Well, let me direct you to tab 72. If we look at page 21 of that report, this is your report. Maybe we better just go very briefly to the second page, transmittal letter.
Yes.
This is in connection with Parcel 97-1.
You're on right. Page 21?
I've gone to the transmittal letter first, my lord. I'll come to page 21 in a moment. This report is in connection with Parcel 97-1.
It is.
All right, now let's go to page 21.
So what were you doing with the transmittal letter?
Just identifying the property that this report deals with.
Where the property is now.
At page 21, Mr. Carter, you see under the heading Parcel 97-1, first sentence, the proposed acquisition or subject property is approximately 29 meters wide along the westerly boundary of the Broad Road.
Yes.
All right. And if you go to Appendix A of your report, which is a few pages in from the end. Eight pages in from the end. Okay. Do you see lot 92-2 there?
Yes, I do.
All right, and you see what the frontage is indicated on that plan for lot 92-2?
Yeah.
61 meters?
61 meters.
All right. So if you take the 29 meters off of parcel 97-1, there would be 32 meters remaining, would there not, on a frontage in the remnant?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Now, you were asked by Mr. Caldwell about select cutting on the, I believe, on the larger HAR property.
Right.
Okay. Do you know what select cutting is?
Yes.
Okay. Can you just briefly?
Well, it's as opposed to clear cutting, where you go in and strip the forest completely out, you go in and you pick the mature trees and you cut them accordingly and leave sufficient number of trees to replenish the forest.
All right. And if you look at tab 66, as you did when asked about this by Mr. Caldwell, that's volume A1.
Tab 66 is volume A1.
Yes. Sierra photograph. Do you know when this photograph was taken?
No, I don't.
What about in terms of the highway construction?
Well, yes, it's after the highway was constructed.
All right. And do you know when select cutting was done by the applicants on the property?
Well, according to Mr. Harris, he told me he had done select cutting prior to my meeting him on November the 14th, 1997, that he had... Since acquiring the property, he had been in and he had select cut on the property.
Do you know for what purpose?
I think it was for firewood for himself, if I recall his testimony.
I believe Jamie Harris testified that mature hardwood was used for firewood and that mature softwood would be sold.
Yes.
All right. Are you aware or not whether any further select cutting was done for either of those purposes after the construction of the highway?
I'm not aware.
Or indeed, after the expropriation? No? Okay. All right, in connection with the offer by Mr. Libby, which you report in your report, for a lot 5 in 1994, I believe, $13,000 for a lot number 5.
Yes.
All right. If I'm correct when I say that there is no evidence before the court of any subdivision plan for 16 lots having been prepared before January 1997. Are you able to say in that case what lot 5 there was in 1994 or where it was?
Not in 1994 at all.
Okay. You were asked about the evidence before the court that the remnant of lot 92-2 sold for $4,000.
That was Mr. Caldwell that told me that, yes.
Yeah. And you were then asked whether, as a rule of thumb, the whole of the lot would be worth $16,000?
Well, he extrapolated that from 25%.
Yeah.
Yes.
But whether that lot would actually sell on the market for $16,000 is another question either.
Which was larger? You got it in your report, the area of the parcel taken and of the entire property, but just from memory, which was larger, the remnant or the parcel taken?
The remnant.
The remnant was larger. And if we go to tab 72, tab 72, page 41,
I
with reference to the value of the parent, the lines of value of parent parcel before the taking and value of the property after the taking. Can you tell us what your opinion was of value of the remnant?
My opinion was the value of the remnant was $2,000.
Okay. Thank you. Now, I believe that you agreed with Mr. Caldwell when he told you about Mr. Raymond's evidence about the necessity of an order in council to put a freeze on development. I believe you agreed that if that was so, you weren't aware of any actual freeze. Okay. But you did try subdivision approach to the property in any case?
I did.
Okay. And the results were as you've described in evidence?
But I ended up with a before with an at with a value before on the 16 lots based on an absorption rate of 4 lots a year and a sale price of $13,000.
Yes.
And then I did an after approach, an after the 10 value based on 10 lots with a price of with a 3-year rate, absorption rate, 4 lots a year for the first 2 years and then 2 lots in the third year. The value, the price of the lots were, I think, 15,500, 13,500, and 13,000, something like that.
Okay.
And the result of the before.
Well, he's already given evidence on direct on this very point, and now he's reiterating that on this redirect, and I'll have no chance to examine him further.
I think actually the business about the 5 appraisals that I didn't see came from you originally.
Well, actually he discussed how he had done this subdivision approach and handed it in on direct.
Is that right, Mr. Wright? I've forgotten that.
On direct he talked about putting in a subdivision approach, and he testified that he
ended
had
up
done,
higher.
I think, 3 or 4 approaches. The 5 came out on cross-examination.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to allow any questions on that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, on cross-examination, Mr. Carter, you were asked about some providential sales. It was suggested to you that some of your sales that used in your third report at tab 73 were providential.
Yes.
And just to refresh your memory a little, that was on the basis that a certain price was paid according to your sales indices for the property, and then that subsequently some subdivided lots were either, in the case of the subject property, valued at you by you at $10,000 each, or in the case of other properties, sold for an amount which obviously was at a rate per acre that was higher than the purchase of the parent property. Remember that?
I lost on that one, Mr. I remember something of, I guess you rephrase that.
Yes, I'll make it shorter. It was put to you that one of your comparison sales, one of your comparables, I believe it was index 2 or 3, but you don't need to look, had been purchased for a certain sum of money, and then subsequently, I believe it was 3 lots subdivided and sold.
Oh, yes.
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 And my question to you, I don't remember the prices put to you, but they were clearly prices where the rate per acre would be higher than the sale you were getting for the parent property.
Yes.
Okay. So these are the questions that I have in relation to that. In your report of January 12, 98, tab 73 for the HAR construction property, which were you appraising, market value of raw unsubdivided land or market value of subdivided land?
Market value of raw unsubdivided land.
And the comparison sales you used were which? Sales of raw unsubdivided land or sales of subdivided land?
Sales of unsubdivided land.
And in your opinion, what price does an informed, willing seller of raw unsubdivided land expect to get? Which of these? A price based on the going rate in the marketplace per acre for raw unsubdivided land, or a price based on the going rate in the marketplace for subdivided land?
Based on the way the direct comparison approach I was using was unsubdivided land, the rate for unsubdivided land.
On unsubdivided, is that what you're on raw unsubdivided?
Well,
or
no, maybe I'm not clear on your question.
Let me ask the question again. In your opinion, what price does an informed, willing seller of raw unsubdivided land expect to get? The going rate in the marketplace per acre for raw unsubdivided land, or the going rate in the marketplace for raw, for subdivided land?
You can understand that question, Mr. Carter. You're a better man than I am.
Well, I think I understand. I know. You're asking me what if somebody was buying raw, if I was appraising raw unsubdivided land,
right,
would the purchaser of that unsubdivided land be interested in the value of that based on comparison with other unsubdivided parcels?
In effect, that's what I'm asking you.
Well, I say yes.
Yes, as opposed to the price of the land that's already subdivided.
Yes.
All right. Those are all my questions, my lord. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Carter, if somebody was going to pay $13,000 for a lot in 1994, what would be the price in 97? Can you?
I wouldn't say there'd be much difference if you're the lord in 1997 at that particular time.
In that area.
In that area.
Now, when somebody buys a chunk of land, 25 or 30 acres like this, with the intention to subdivide it, there's a series of events that lead up to it being fully ready to market as a subdivision.
Right.
It may take a short period of time if you've got an aggressive, well-financed developer. May take a longer period of time if somebody is undercapitalized and so on. Now, at the beginning, it's vacant land.
Yes.
And at the end, I suppose, for purposes of appraisal, it should be treated as subdivision land ready for sale. You treated this, and I'm talking about HAR property now, you treated this as page 28 of your report, I believe.
Page 28, tab 73.
You treated it as, quote, holding use, future residential development. What would it take in terms of progression for you to have treated it as Mr. Babineau did, that is, a subdivision?
The big factor would be the value of the lot, what you could sell the lots for.
What would Mr. Harris have to do in addition to what he had already done to change your highest and best use from, quote, holding use, future residential development, to subdivision? He had bought a raw piece of land. He had done certain things with it in terms of getting the front end subdivided, having two accesses in there, both on paper and to some extent on the land. What more would he have had to do for you to change your highest and best use from holding use future residential development to what Mr. Babineau treated as subdivision.
Well, I guess, Lord, that what I'm looking at is the in the case of the subdivision is whether it's economically feasible to develop. And so the price of the lots would have to be higher. I don't know if it would have much to do with what Mr. Harris could do himself. It's really the time, I guess, and the marketplace that would have to make the decision. If someone appraised that property at a higher value, and say this was anybody other than Mr. Harris, it could be anybody, went out and bought the land and went to develop and found out he was in a financial mess, which could happen. So it's very important that the price of the lots be there and the absorption rate, the demand be there. And given those two factors, it would make all the difference in the world.
You alluded to that yesterday when you talked about talking to Mr. Carr.
Yes.
When he said he wouldn't. That's what you're talking about right now, is it?
Yes.
It isn't worth it unless you can get over 16,000 a lot, I think he said.
I believe 15 to 16,000. Yeah. That was back a few years ago before you could go ahead and afford to develop. The other gentleman who did develop not too far from where Mr. Carr is doing his road front lots, this chap is another car, and I've forgotten his name, first name, but he's got a subdivision down there, but he's started in 1960. It'll take him all this time to develop what he has there shown on that plan. That's up to date.
Better hurry up.
Date of that plan. So that wasn't very many lots a year.
Anything arising out of that, Mr. Wright?
No, thank you,
Mr. Cole.
Yes, I do, Willard. In order for Mr. Harris to develop the land, you were asked what next steps would he have to take. And I'm not sure that you addressed what these next steps were, but one of them would be to register a subdivision plan at some point.
I asked him what he would have to do to treat the highest and best use
I see.
As,
yes.
Quote, subdivision rather than
yes.
holding use.
Yeah. You did speak in terms of financial viability. You understood, however, that Mr. Harris was not only subdividing and planning to develop the land, but also building the houses that were to go on the land. So he was doing more than just subdividing the land, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. So that you knew that he had the resources and the skills to be able to carry out that plan of subdividing and building and selling homes, right?
I knew he had those skills.
Yeah. That changes the dynamic, the financial dynamic, considerably, doesn't it?
I don't think it does.
Well, if he can build a home for $108,000 at a cost to him of $50,000, it changes the dynamic, doesn't it?
Is that market value, Mr. Caldwell? I'm dealing with market value, and
yes.
This might be where there's a mix-up. I'm talking market. You seem to be talking something else.
No.
Market.
The opinion of Mr. Babineau was that the houses of a certain quality and size could be built in that market and sold for $108,000, including the land value. And there was also evidence that the cost of constructing that using Mr. Harris's own resources would be in the order of $50,000, indicating that there was a substantial profit to the builder, Mr. Harris, of a considerable amount, right? You're aware of that?
I disagree with the concept. To me, the lot values have to be there, the demand has to be there, and even though Mr. Harris can build the houses,
yes,
I don't question that, and he may save and make more profit by building the houses himself.
Yes.
And but still, from the open market, and it's not just the market that Mr. Harris has for himself, it's the broad open market.
Yes.
It's not, the development is not there until the lot values increase and the absorption rate and the demand is there.
Well, you've already testified earlier that the demand was there for four houses per year, whether or not Mr. Harris was going to build that many.
I scrapped that, Mr. Caldwell. I was not comfortable with that whole scenario that I did there and scrapped it.
I'm sorry. I thought that was a reasoned judgment on your part, looking at the demand in the area. Now you're saying it's not? Now you're saying it's not a reasoned judgment that you made?
I'm saying that I scrapped the subdivision approach and went with the direct.
I understand that, but your selection of an absorption rate for the Harris property of 4 per year,
yeah.
I put it to you, was a reasoned judgment on your part at the time, wasn't it?
But
it wasn't. He didn't say recent. It was reasoned.
Reasoned. That is, it was a deliberate judgment that you made, right?
So the absorption rate obtained from the marketplace.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Right.
But it still has to do with the value of the lots, the price of the lots. If you can't get the price, then it's not economic.
But if Harris is building the homes himself at his cost, whatever that may be, and selling them for $108,000, lot included, the price of the lot just gets subsumed in the price of the house, doesn't it? Okay.
I'm getting confused. You're talking costs, and I'm talking market value.
So I'm talking both. If he's building the houses and selling the houses at a certain price in the marketplace, if the marketplace can absorb it, and his cost of doing that is X dollars, then there's the prospect of him making a profit, and a substantial profit. Isn't that true?
That may be so. Yeah.
And I put it to you that in that scenario, the value of the land as a part of the total purchase price gets subsumed in the total purchase price. That is, it's part of the total purchase price, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I don't agree with it.
All right. I won't belabor
it. Because I wasn't asked to look at it on that basis. I looked at it strictly on a market basis.
Yeah, I understand that you weren't asked to look on it on that basis. Mr. Babineau was, but you were not, right?
Okay.
Right. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Willard.
Thanks very much. Do you want to get all the original exhibits? Just the ones that have my initial. You got a photograph back, did you?
Yep.
Okay, now, that's the evidence for the respondent, is it?
Yes, my lord, that's all the evidence.
Okay. You can step down, Mr. Carter, thank you. How much time do you want to file briefs?
What do you think?
We haven't talked about that.
No.
I could by March 31st.
March 31st?
I can wait.
No. March 31st. Yeah, that's the other one. I think we would really need 3 weeks.
Okay, well, today is the 16th. Are you 23rd is 1 week, 30th is another. probably the April Fool's Day. Well, I better not say that. The 6th is the third Wednesday. Do you want to say the following Monday?
That would be fine, I think.
The 11th? Okay, briefs filed by April the 11th, 05, and any rebuttal brief or commentary, even by way of letter, for example. All right, I'll go back a step. Each of the briefs that you submit will be filed and you'll exchange. You will have... How much time do you need to file any rebuttal? Beyond April the 11th.
A week.
In other words, you get the other side's brief by April 11th, and you have some commentary about it or comment about it. How long do you want to?
Yes, I think one more week would be fine.
Okay, so that brings it up to April 18th. And again, provide the other side with your commentary. But that's the end of it.
Yes.
No, I haven't formed any opinion about anything. I want to preface any of my comments that I'm going to make now about that. I've listened to the evidence. I haven't had time to digest a lot of the written material, most of the written material, or the cases, for that matter, on the subject. But, you know, I can't say that the appraisers in and of themselves were that much help to me. I say that because I have reason to believe Mr. Goodwin gets hired. He provides a figure which is in the material somewhere. The person that hires him doesn't like it, so he fires him and goes and gets somebody who, it seems to me, provides the figure that he wants, that the plaintiff wants, something in the range of $950,000. On the other hand, the respondent hires an appraiser who provides a figure that's bottom end, and he justifies it in the way appraisers do by talking about direct market comparisons and so on and so forth. But the long and short of it is, it's a very, very minimal figure. And for that reason, because one is bottom line and one is top line, and there appears to be a third one by a person that I have reason to believe is a competent individual that is somewhere in the middle, I'm not sure that any of that in and of themselves are of much help to me. It may be that I'm going to have to use computer jargon, cutting and pasting. One thought that strikes me that just because formal approval of the subdivision has not yet been obtained, in A1 tab 5, for example, does that mean, on a balance of probabilities, that it was not going to be a subdivision in the near future had expropriation not occurred? Do I look at one item, for example, the formal approval of a subdivision, or do I look at a whole series of events leading up to that? And that's somewhat the question I put to Mr. Carter, to determine whether I should consider it an expropriation of a subdivision or raw land. And I recognize that I've got to deal with market, too. In fact, that's what I have to deal with. The other thing that is going to cause me some concern is, and it's quite apart from the value of the land in terms of whether it's a subdivision or whether it's a raw piece of land, but I'm talking about the HAR property now. The other thing that causes me some concern is the question of building homes. That may be a little more problematic from the plaintiff's perspective, given his financial history and the history of the store, for example, the history of, or the explanation of why something wasn't done in 1996. You know, he had a float as early as late August, early September 1996. There's 2.5 months left, 2 months at least. He got houses framed in, or a house. Again, I haven't reached any conclusion, but it seems to me whether he's going to build houses, personally, quite apart from developing a subdivision, may be a little more problematic. Really, those are the only comments I have. So I guess I'd like you to address those. I'm sort of rambled a bit, but one of them was more focused. The first part was more focused on you, Mr. Wright.
Yes.
The second part was more focused than you, Mr. Pinio and Mr. Caldwell. Convince me.
Thank you.
Okay, is there anything else before the break?
I don't believe so, not from the province.
Not from the applicant side.
Okay, let's see if we've got all the exhibits here. Just give me the A exhibits. Yeah, okay, I'm just going to, and there's one over there, A3 is over there. okay, A1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 and 12, and I think that's it, is it, A12? And that's our two over there, isn't it? R1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13,
yeah.
Where's 14? No, 14, 15, 16, and 17. And that's it. Now, I've got one that's just one that was used for one of the court or the witness. Does anybody want this back?
Yes. Sorry, Miller.
That's A2. Do you want that back?
Yes.
Yes.
We'll take it back. Certainly.
Okay, thanks very much. Oh, but one more thing. I don't know when I'm going to be able to get at this after I get your briefs. I've got some judgments to write, and quite obvious, if you're sitting in court, you can't be writing judgments. So I'll try and get at it as soon as I can.
Thank you, Mark.
All right.
Thank you, Mark.